Okay, good morning, everybody. Boker Tov. Good to see you all. Apologies for the late start. And there was a little bit of chill. Was it cold outside when you were waiting, or was it sort of nice? That was nice to bake in the sun. Okay. Okay, maybe it's a beach day here in Ra'anan. I don't know. So we'll see how the rest of the day goes. We're in the middle of Perek Tet. Okay, we're in the middle of Perek Tet. Let's go to Pasuk. And I'll just summarize what happened beforehand in Perek Tet. Well, my goal is to finish Perek Tet, end Perek Yud today. Okay, and we're going to meet a very interesting character by the name of the Queen of Sheba. Okay, the Queen of Sheba. She's got this mystique about her, right? We'll see what she adds to the conversation here. But in Perek Tet, Shlomo finishes building the Beit HaMikdash. And Hashem again sort of warns him, make sure you keep the mitzvot, make sure that you're following my ways. Yeah, the Perek Tet, okay, the ninth Perek. So we're up to, let's start with Pasuk Yud, okay? So chapter 9, Pasuk 10, Pasuk Yud, okay? And we're going to see that, hello Isabel, how you doing? Okay, welcome. Pasuk Yud, Vahi Mikze Esrim Shana, so it was 20 years. We're in Perek Tet 9, verse 10. Asher banah Shlomo shnei abatim. After 20 years of Shlomo building these two homes, the Beit HaMikdash and his own palace, et Beit Hashem veit Beit HaMelech, chira melech tzur nisad Shlomo ba'atzei arzim v'atzei v'roshim uva'zahav v'chol chepzo. And Chiram, remember, was the supplier, okay, with all the wood coming from Tyre, from Lebanon. Az yitein ha-melech Shlomo l'Chiram esrim ir be'eretz Galil. And then Shlomo does something very strange. And we addressed this a little bit last week, where it seems like Shlomo gives away certain parts of Eretz Yisrael. Now, one has to wonder, I mean, was this... This is long before Rav Avadia's psak on land for the sake of peace. I mean, we're not supposed to give away Eretz Yisrael. There's a mitzvah. You know, the Ramban speaks about inheriting the land and settling the land. I'm not saying there aren't circumstances where one can give away land, but it's a very strange thing that he gives away 20 cities in the Galil. And it seems like it would appear that he is selling, he's giving this land because he's in debt. And he can't pay Chiram. He's got to pay up his bills, and he doesn't have any assets in cash. He's got a cash flow problem. So what do? You give away some real estate. Okay, we spoke about the Rashbam on the Akedah, who says that Avraham was punished with the Akedah because he gave away land to Avimelech. Okay, so it's an interesting Rashbam. It's not the only perspective in Jewish thought on giving away Eretz Yisrael or parts of it, but it's definitely an important one. Tov, Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayetzi Chiram. Now, Chiram comes and wants to see the cities that he's received. He says, good land. Can I build a summer home here? You know, is there any, what's the value here? Vayetzi Chiram mitzor lirot et ha'arim asher natan lav Shlomo. V'lo yashru beinav. He says, I don't want this stuff. This is not prime real estate. You know, there's no 5G. There's no tech area, you know, how am I going to do anything with this land? No, bro, what is this land that you gave me? They called this land Eretz Kavul. Kavul is like dirt or peat, you know, just adayom hazeh. Vayishlach Hiram haMelech, and it was swampy area, of course, we know. Before the Chalutzim came, Vayishlach Chiram Namelech 120 Kikar Zahav. So Chiram sends to the king then 120 Kikar Zahav. Now, this is interesting. I don't understand. Who owes whom money? Maybe it seems like one interpretation is this is all the money, all the supplies that he sent to Shlomo was worth 120 Kikarim of Zahav. Maybe that was that's the bill, the ultimate bill that Shlomo had to pay, which is obviously a significant amount of money. V'zed dvar hamas asher he'ala ha'melech Shlomo livnot beit Hashem. You're supposed to boo. Remember in Megillat Esther, when Achashverosh establishes a tax, we're supposed to boo. V'zed dvar hamas asher he'ala ha'melech Shlomo livnot beit Hashem et beito ve'et hamilo ve'et chumat Yerushalayim. To build this whole building campaign the Milo is like a mivtzar, some fortress of sorts that was also in Yerushalayim. To build all these things, he had to raise taxes. Okay, Things don't come from nowhere. You can't just print money. Paro Melech Mitzrayim ala. Then we're told about Paro Melech Mitzrayim goes up. Vayil kodet gezer vayisrefa ba'esh. And he decided to burn gezer. Okay. Now, where is gezer? A gezer would appear to be sort of the as you go from Hare Yehuda. It's at the end of Hare Yehuda, right where it meets the Shvela. The Shvela is like the lowland. Okay, so this is an area that he decides, a city that he conquers and burns. Ve'et ha'kananiya yoshev ba'ir harag, and then the Kananim living in the city he kills. Va'itna shiluchim levito esha Shlomo. And he sends messengers. Remember, Shlomo has a diplomatic connection to the king of Egypt because he's married his daughter. Va'iven Shlomo et Gazer. So Shlomo rebuilds Gazer. Ve'et beit choron tachton. And beit choron. Now there's something interesting here. One second. There's just something, an archaeological piece. Let's see if it's interesting. Okay. Different. They found this old calendar in old Hebrew. That tells about the agriculture, seasonal schedule. Okay, they found some different things in the area they think is Gezer. Ve'et Ba'alat Tadmor, ve'et Temer Bamidbar Ba'aretz. He also built this other area, Tadmor and Ba'alat, in the Midbar, in the land. Eit kol ha'arei ha'miskanot asher ayu l'shlomo, ve'et arei ha'recha, ve'et arei ha'parashim, ve'et cheshek shlomo. There were all these different cities of, where he would house his chariots, and all these different places. Ve'et cheshek shlomo asher chashak livnot b'yushalayim levanon v'chol eretz mem shalto. Okay, and all these different areas. Cheshek Shlomo, what is this referring to? Cheshek Livnot is it's either another city or Cheshek. Or something that the things that he desired to build. Okay, so two different ways of possibly interpreting this. These were all lands that were, surviving tribes that preceded the Jews were living in. These were people, the Jewish people didn't succeed at killing. Again, Shlomo is expanding his empire. There are also some spots, sort of some places within the land that he still hadn't, the Jews hadn't conquered, and now they're filling this all in. By Alem Shlomo Namaso Aved Ayon Hamazeh, he made all these people into tax-paying sort of servants. Ubnei Yisrael Lo Natan Shlomo Aved, and to the Jewish people, Shlomo didn't make into Avadim, he didn't make them to servants. Ki Heim Anshei HaMilchama V'Avada V'Sara V'Shalisha V'Sarech Bo Parashav. However, they had other jobs. They were warriors. They were sort of servants in his household. They were ministers. They were the heads of his chariots. Eile sarei hanitzavim asher hamelacha lishlamo v'chamishim v'chamesh meot harodim b'amosim hamelacha. They were higher up in the hierarchy. Okay, so they weren't the servants, the slaves on the bottom, but the Jewish people were the ones who were higher up. Now, ve'ela Shlomo shalosh pamim b'shana olot u'shlamim al ha'mizbeach asher bana l'Hashem. Shlomo would give three sacrifices a year in the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, v'hakter oto asher... Oh, sorry. Oh, ach bat paro al tameir David el beita asher bana la az bana tamilo. Okay, it seems like bat paro goes up from Ir David to her home. We don't know what her home is referring to. What home did she live in? Maybe he built her own home, and it's surrounded by the Milo. As banat Milo, he builds this fortress. It's unclear what this is referencing, but we're going to come back to Bat Paro because she might be the beginning of Shlomo's downfall. Okay. Ve'helah Shlomo shlosh pamim b'shana olot u'shlamim al ha'mizbeach asher bana l'Hashem v'hakter ito asher livnei Hashem v'shilam et ha'bayit. And Shlomo would go up three times a year, and he would bring korbanot. Perhaps this is the shalosh regalim. That's what it would seem to suggest. Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. And he would also v'hakter. He would sacrifice before the Lord, the Ketoret, etc. V'shilam et ha'bayit. And it seems like he finished the end work on the home, okay, on the Beit HaMikdash. V'oni asa hamelech Shlomo. This is interesting. Shlomo also built boats. Oni, like Oniya. Be'etzion gaver. Where is Etzion gaver? Eight elot al svat yam suf be'aret Edom. Where is that? Where are you saying Herzliya? It's in Eilat. Shlomo, there was a port in Eilat. This is very interesting. So this is part of Eretz Yisrael, the extended borders, at least in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. This is where people go today to...
Isn't that one of the places they stopped on the way?
Etzion Gever is one of the places they stopped. Correct. Correct. Yafe. Vaishlach Chiram Bo'oni. And Chiram then sent by boat et avadav anshei oniyot yodei ha'am im avdei Shlomo. So now they're going on these sort of adventurous boat trips. Chiram is in Lebanon, right? Mm-hmm. How is he getting boats to Shlomo and Etzion Gaver? I don't know if the Suez Canal was up and working then. I don't know. What do you think? Sounds like they go all the way around the Horn of Africa. I don't, is that worth it? I don't know if it's worth it. Is it worth it to go all the way around the Horn of Africa to bring supplies that you could have brought over land from Lebanon to Eretz Yisrael? Right, good question. Maybe they were getting into the shipping business. They wanted to go further east. Okay, and we'll see this may be relevant to the next pair. Vayavo Ofira, vayikhu misham zahav, arba miot v'esrim kikar, vayaviu el ha-melech Shlomo. And they go to a place called Ofira. Where is Ofira? So it's a place which is known, is famous for its zahav, okay? But it's not clear where this is. One second. Not clear where this is exactly. However, we're going to see a certain historical interpretation which is going to connect now to the Queen of Sheba. Okay, so we're gonna come back to this notion of boats and boat building and shipping industry and we're gonna see how that relates. Let's go to now. Yeah. Sure.
I know it all, but
yeah.
We learned a poem in school. It was called Cargoes.
Yeah.
And the first stanza went, Quinquirim of Nineveh from distant Ophir.
What poem was this?
It's called Cargoes by Jean Bateman.
Yeah. Say
and
it again.
A Quinquirim is a five-layered ship, you know, with five sets of oars in the one on top.
Okay, and where is Ophir?
Ninveh
in sort of
there, somewhere maybe.
Near there, interesting. Maybe they went through, I don't know, maybe through the by Istanbul. They went through the what's it called? The Bosphorus.
Yeah. Wasn't that Babylon?
Ninveh is like somewhere between Syria and like southern Turkey, Iraq, like it's sort of in that area, maybe the Kurdish area. I think it's somewhere in that area. Okay, so what we're seeing here is now there is a little bit of a shift because we saw beforehand in Parakeh that Shlomo, this is back to Chiram, Shlomo had given food to Chiram in return for supplies. And now it seems like Shlomo is giving land instead. So maybe, I don't know, it seems like Shlomo is not as wealthy as he used to be, and all this building is taking a toll, and there's excess, and something, there's a little bit, he overspent, perhaps, on everything. Okay, so this is, again, we're seeing a little bit of an echo of, we're getting to the main parak, where Shlomo is going to start making some trouble. But we're seeing problems sort of lining up, starting to line up. Now let's look at the story of the Queen of Sheba. Pasuk Parakut. What do you know of the Queen of Sheba? Yeah. Okay. Fine. What else? Okay. What else? Where is Sheba? Or Sheva. Where is Sheva? Sheba. Maybe Ethiopia or Sudan. Okay. Umalkat Sheva. Umalkat Sheva. Here, Kasudos tells us it's Be'eretz Arav. Be'eretz Arav would appear to be Saudi Arabia. Okay. And he says, B'tkufa mocheret yoter, shachnu hashvaim Be'eretz Teman. the Shvaim, I guess for some tribe, were living in the land of Teman. This is in Yemen, which is at the edge of Arabia. Al Sfat Yam Suf Eretz Poria Umfursumet Bin Mini Atse Bose Magdalim Sham, known for having beautiful plants. Vachain Ke Eretz Zahav is also a place of gold. No Da'a La Gam Chashivut Mischarit was also an important trading place. Aden, if I'm not mistaken, is right, is in Yemen.
It's got black gold.
What's oil. Oh, oil. Does it have black gold, Yemen? Yemen also has gold?
No, but
Arabia. Arabia. I don't know if they were mining oil at this point in time, but okay. Now, what does she hear? What happens? Shomat et Shema Shlomo the Shema Hashem. She hears everything that Shlomo is doing. The Shema Hashem. What does it mean, the Shema Hashem? Maybe it's in the name of God. Okay. Vatavo l'nasato b'chidot. She comes and she wants to do some word puzzles with him. She wants to ask him some tough questions. Or she hears about the wisdom that he has emanating from Hashem and she wants to ask him some tough questions to test his knowledge. Vatavo Yerushalayim b'chayil kaved mo'od. She comes to Yerushalayim with great fanfare and many people. Ugmalim nosim b'samim. And her gemalim are bringing spices, v'zahav rav meod, v'even yikara, and precious stones. V'atavol shemo v'daber elav eit kol asher hayaim levavah. She speaks to him everything that's on her heart. Okay. V'yaged la Shlomo eit kol dvar. She tells Shlomo, Shlomo tells her everything related to her, what she asked him. Lo yadavar ne'elam min ha'melech asher lo higid la. Nothing was, Shlomo didn't hold back sharing all of his wisdom from her. Okay. Vatere malkat shiva eight kol chokhmat Shlomo v'abayit asher bana. She sees the house. She sees his wisdom. She's wow. This guy is smart. Okay. Umachal shulchano moshav avadav. She sees how he runs his household and everyone who sits. You know, the glory, the splendor. Umamad mishartav umabushem umashkav olator shuyala beit Hashem. She sees everyone's clothing and the garments, and she sees the korbanot v'lo ayah va'od ruach. She couldn't. Wow, she was amazed. She was in shock. She was spellbound. V'tomer el ha'melech. She says, emet ayah davar sheshamati ba'arti al davaracha. Everything I've heard in my land is true. V'al chokhmatach and your wisdom. V'lo hamanti ladvei mashad asher ba'iti bati v'tirena einai. I didn't believe this until seeing it with my own eyes. Okay, so he's made a name for himself in the Middle East. I wasn't even told half of everything here. So you've added wisdom and goodness even beyond what I've heard. It seems like it's the way he's running his country, how organized the land is, how abundant everything is. Ashrei anashecha, ashrei avadecha. Praiseworthy are your people, praiseworthy are your avadim, your servants, elam din lefanecha tamid, hashomim et chachmatecha. How blessed they are, they get to hear your wisdom all the time. Okay? Yihi Hashem Elokecha Baruch. May Hashem your God be blessed, asher chafetz becha, who desired you letitcha al kisei Yisrael, to put you upon the throne of Israel. Be'avat Hashem et Yisrael le'olam, because he loves Hashem, the Jewish people forever. Vayisimcha lemelech la'asot mishpat utztaka. He's made you a king to do mishpat utztaka, to do righteousness and justice. Now, interesting. What happens next? Vatitein lemelech mea ve'esrim kikar zahav. She gives him 120 kikare zahav. Uvesamim harbei meod, and much besamim. Ve'even yikara, precious stones. There was never more than this, meaning no one ever gave more than this. This was an abundant measure. Now, let's go on. V'gam oni chiram asher nasa zahav me'ofir, hevi me'ofir. Also the boats that Chiram brought with gold from Ophir, hevi me'ofir artze al mugim harbei me'od ve'even yikara. So these boats that Chiram, you know, that they were in this, you know, this business partnership, bringing zahav from Ophir, and they also brought artze al mugim harbei me'od ve'even yikara. What's artze al mugim? It's not clear what it is, but it's an expensive wood. Huh? Carl? You think like
it's a coral tree.
Coral tree. Is it expensive wood? Coral tree. It's a nice wood. Okay, interesting. Coral tree. Okay. Okay, interesting. And the king uses this coral tree to make a mis'ad. What's a mis'ad? A fence between the king's palace and the Beit HaMikdash, it seems like, or the Beit HaMelech. And to buy more musical instruments for the Sarim. They never had this again. This was like a one-off opportunity to bring this coral tree. The king gave everything that she asked for, except for what he gave her by hand. And she goes back to her land.
What numbers did this be?
It's a good question. I don't know. I don't know what language they speak. It's a good question. What language they spoke. They must have had translators. Now, what is the meaning of this? What is the story? And who is the Queen of Sheba? So let's do a little bit of history. Let's try to understand who the Queen of Sheba was. I want to share with you an article from Rabbi Professor Moshe Sokolow. He asks, who is the Queen of Sheba? We do have some biblical clues, but the rest is pure speculation, perhaps even fantasy. First of all, let us examine the biblical evidence. Sheba appears to have been, in really ancient times, a reasonably popular name, occurring no fewer than three times in Genesis. First as a son of Cush, second as a son of Yoktan, and finally as a son of Yokshan. There are also three references to Sheba in Ezekiel, where Dedan is also mentioned, and the raiders who slew Job's children and looted Zom are also identified with Sheba. However, since Uz, Job's homeland, is otherwise identified, that's not much help. Okay, here is the commentary on verse 1 of Ralbag. Okay, this is the Ralbag, Gersonides, who lived in Provence in the 14th century. See if you can tell where the biblical allusions end and the speculation begins. In the book of Ben Sira, it is written that she was the mother of Nebuchadnezzar. Which is deeply problematic because Nebuchadnezzar lives 500 years later. She was born to one of the sons of the concubines whom Abraham banished from the presence of his son Yitzchak, advising them to distance themselves lest they subjugate Isaac's descendants, because anyone subjugated to Isaac's descendants will never ever recover. Now, when they heard that Solomon is a world ruler, they thought that he was the Messiah, whom Abraham had told them to anticipate. That is why the Queen of Sheba came when she heard of Solomon's fame through the names of the Lord, hearing that Solomon ruled the world even over the shades and the birds. Okay, so which part of this is true, which part of it is fiction? Almost all of it, probably. Okay, the book of Ben Sira to which Ralbag referred is not the apocryphal book of that name, but a work of lesser repute known as the Alphabet of Ben Sira. Also, the legend of the Queen of Sheba features in Islam as well, which identifies her with the South Arabian kingdom of Saba and dates the arrival there of the first Yemenite Jews to the time of Solomon. The Ethiopic church adopted it too, claiming that the kings of Ethiopia were descended from the union of Solomon and the Queen of Sheba. Ah, so they got married. There was a shidduch between them. Okay? So there's more beneath the surface than one thing. Hence, the renowned Queen Haile Selassie referred to himself as the Lion of Judah. Do you know who the...
Yeah,
who's Haile Selassie?
He was the king of Ethiopia.
Ah. I guess those who grew up in Africa know a little bit more about the kings of... Was he famous? What was he famous for?
He was
the Lion
of Judah.
Really, really king.
Uh-huh. Was he a friend of the Jews?
He is something connected with the Rastafarians as well. They've taken their ideas from they believe they're part of this. Whole dynasty.
Okay, interesting. So there you go, the Queen of Sheba. Now,
I remember reading that the Queen of Sheba had a very profitable land transport business, and that when Solomon started his shipping, she was very upset. Therefore, that is why she came with the gifts, etc., to persuade him, to leave her
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Okay, so two different readings of this text. First, let me give you the commercial one, if you will. I saw an article on the Da'at website, which spoke about that what is she really coming for? She's coming to speak about his wisdom. That's not what she's really here for. She's here for diplomatic relations. And the argument is as follows, that Shlomo and Hiram just opened up a water route to get goods from the west, the east, okay, spices and gold. And she is, she has a different, she's part of the land route. And she's concerned that with this new trade route opening up by water, she's going to lose all of her kingdom's, precious trade business. So what does she do? She essentially buys out Shlomo. She gets him to agree to her terms. She gives him all this money and says, just close down your shipping business. And notice she gives him the same amount of money that Shlomo owed to Hiram. So that's one interpretation of this story. Second interpretation is obviously, listen, this is a Kiddush Hashem of sorts. We see queens from the Arabian Peninsula coming, hearing about Shlomo's wisdom, which is associated with Hashem. Okay, there's something, it's not just Shlomo's wisdom, that came from Hashem. She's enamored with him and everything that he's done. And this, to some degree, is the pinnacle. We see what Shlomo was able to accomplish. He's able to be a player on the world stage and bring God into the sort of global conversation, if you will. Bring God into the business. Okay. And there's some hidden rebuke here. But also, what she says to him, "Vayisimcha lemelech lasot mishpat utzdaka." Wow, you've been given this wisdom what is the end goal of power, of wealth, of wisdom? Even what is the end goal of it? It's to create tzedakah u'mishpat. She recognizes that. Shlomo also recognizes it, but it seems like he's getting pulled in other directions as well. And this is the ultimate question. Everything that we strive for, the money that we have saved up in the bank, all the, everyone going about trying to, be successful. What is the ultimate goal? That's the question that we need to constantly be asking ourselves. What is it that we really want to accomplish? What do we do once we've succeeded or once we've amassed the riches that we're trying to procure? Are we going to end up just falling prey to it? Is it going to control us? Or do we use it to bring righteousness and mishpat into the world? And that's the ultimate question that Shlomo struggles with and perhaps fails at. It's a question that we need to ask in our own lives as well. And the continuation of the parak seems to suggest that, I don't know, it seems like Shlomo is being pulled in the wrong direction here. So let's look at Pasuk Yudalid. Okay, we continue. Vayi mishkala zahav asher bali Shlomo bashana achat. And then all the money, the gold that he hoarded, or in this year, bishana achat sheish meot shishim vashesh kikar zahav. That's a lot. Wow. Levad me'anshei hatarim u'mischar ha'rochlim. Aside for all of the different businesses, the trading, the caravans that came through the land. Okay, one second. Just want to pull up Perek Yud. V'chol machaya erev ufachot ha'aretz. And the king, Shlomo continues to build even more. Okay. What else does he build? Levad me'anshei hatarim. Okay. Vayas melech Shlomo, 200 tzina zahav, shachut, 600 zahav, yale al tzina echat. He made 200 shields of beaten gold and 600 shekels of gold to each shield. I'm not 100% sure what these are referring to, but he made these ornate decorations of sorts, okay. And what do you do with all this gold? And 300 bucklers of beaten gold, 300 minas of gold to each buckler. The king placed them in the Lebanon forest house. Spoke about the Lebanon forest house. It's not clear exactly what this is. Maybe it's a summer home. The king also made a large throne of ivory, and he overlaid it with refined gold.
When's the estimation of Shlomo goes down?
Yeah, what do you do with all this? Sheish ma'alot tachisei v'rosh agol lachisei me'acharav yadot mizeh umizeh al mekom ha'shevet u'shnayim ariyot umdim eitz la'yadot. Six steps led up to the throne, and the throne had a back with a rounded top and arms on either side of the seat. Two lions stood beside the arms. You had lions and a huge gold throne with ivory tusks. Yes. U'shneimasar arayim umdim sham al sheish ha'ma'alot mizeh mizeh lo naseh chen l'chol ha'malachot. And 12 lions stood on the six steps, six on each side, on either side. No such throne was ever made for any other kingdom. Okay. V'chol kli ha'mashkeh ha'melech Shlomo, zahav v'chol kli beit yar ha'levanon, zahav zagur, ein kesev alon achshav b'mei Shlomo limumah. All King Solomon's drinking cups were of gold, and all the utensils of the Lebanon forest house were of pure gold. Silver did not count for anything in Solomon's days. Wow. Ooh. Get rid of your silver jewelry. Okay. Ki oni tarshish ha'melech bayam im oni chiram. Okay, for the king had a Tarshish fleet on the sea, along with Chiram's fleet. And once every 3 years, kol achat l'shalosh shanim tavo oni tarshish noseid zahav achasev shenahabim v'kofim v'tukim. Every 3 years, the fleet came back bearing gold and silver, ivory, apes, kofim, v'tukim, and peacocks. Okay, so they brought back a lot of exotic things from either, it sounds like Africa. They were trying, maybe going down, okay, so maybe that. Look up the history of this poem. Yeah, maybe look up where it comes from. Okay. Vayigdal ha'melech Shlomo mikol malchei ha'aretz la'osher la'chokhmah. Shlomo is greater than all the kings in wisdom and in wealth. V'chol ha'aretz mevakshim et p'nei Shlomo lishmot chokhmato asher natan lehim b'libo. The whole land wants to come and get advice and wisdom from Shlomo. V'hem ha'mevi'im ish minchato. Klei chesev uklei zahav uslamot v'neshek v'samim susim v'fadim d'var shana b'shana. And they're all bringing to him all these presents and tributes of gold and silver objects, etc. Weapons, robes, spices. It sounds like they want to get advice. Maybe he's like becomes like a sort of business consultant of sorts. You know, it sounds like they want to get, they're not just coming to learn Torah with him. It doesn't sound like that. They want to figure out, they want to crack his business knowledge, his statesmanship, whatever it is. He had 1,400 chariots, 12,000 horses. Where did he put these? They were in Yerushalayim, essentially. It's known as, Solomon's stables, right? Where it's interesting to study that. Where does this come from? This notion, but apparently they were where the, I guess, Al-Aqsa Mosque stood today. I think, if I'm not mistaken. If anybody wants to look it up quickly, the source. Where's this notion of Solomon's stables come from? Where did all the horses come from? Mitzrayim. Why is that noteworthy? You're not allowed to have too many horses so that you don't go down to Mitzrayim. And yet he is... Okay. Umikveh socharei ha'melech yikhu mikveh mimechir. And the king's dealers would buy them from Q, a place called Mikveh. Kveh is a place. For, at a fixed price. Okay, so they would buy the susim from there. And a chariot imported from Mitzrayim would cost 600 shekels of silver and a horse, 150. And these were imported to all the kings of the Chitim and the kings of Aram. Everyone would buy their horses from Mitzrayim. Okay, so this is the end of Perek Yud.
About the stables?
Yes.
Okay, it's now the Marwani Mosque. It's an underground vaulted space now used as a Muslim prayer hall, about 500 square meters at the bottom of the stairs, which lead down from the Al-Aqsa Mosque. In December 1996, the Waqf converted the area into a prayer hall by adding lights and floor tiles and renaming.
So this is beneath the Al-Aqsa.
Beneath.
Like on the stairs?
It's an underground vaulted space.
Under Al-Aqsa Mosque.
At the bottom of the stairs which lead down from the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Uh-huh, which they...
All the dirt that was containing all those wonderful...
It was specifically there. Oh, and they were concerned about the southern wall sort of, falling a little bit.
They used it. I mean, there wasn't used an excuse word.
Yeah. No, it's... very frustrating, to say the least.
They don't say anything about why it's called Solomon's Tables. Some Jordanian scholar said that it was initially a water reservoir built by the Roman Emperor Hadrian.
See, it would be interesting to look at what I would be so fascinated to study what's under the Temple Mount right now. You know, all the alleyways, and there must be a lot under there. Maybe we'd find the Aron HaKodesh. It would be very interesting. So this is Perek Yud. Okay? And now we get to Perek Yud Aleph. We've been building up for Perek Yud Aleph because everything that we've been seeing all these sort of clues dropped along the way. Maybe we just have a list of this wealth and money. And again, what is the point of all this? What is the point of all this? V'amelech Shlomo ahav nashim nochriot rabot. V'et bat paro. Shlomo loved many foreign women. And also bat paro. Moaviot, Ammoniot, Adomiot, Zedoniot, Chitiot. From all different tribes. I don't know. I guess he wanted his children to come from a diversified gene pool. It's really... But say again, what?
Somehow I don't think he did too much.
Yeah, and this is... Minagoyim asher amar Hashem el b'nei Yisrael, specifically from the nations, whom Hashem said, lo tavo vahem, vehim lo yavo vahem. You don't mix, don't intermarry, don't spend too much time together. Because they will turn you towards their gods. It's specifically, almost sounds like intentionally. Shlomo, loved them. Now, what do we, there's a lot to uncover here, and we're going to do that, primarily next week. But is this. How do you get to this place? Is this sort of a mixing? Oh, no, I'm really, this is like just diplomatic relationships. Is that how he saw this and sort of explained it away that way? You know, that this is a way to secure peace and prosperity in the land. What compelled Shlomo to do this? What pulled him in this direction that he felt the need to marry women from all these different, fiefdoms and kingdoms? Vayilo nashim sarot shvameot. He had 700 wives. Ufilagshim shloshmeot, and 300 pilagshim. Vayatu nashav et libo. And these women turned his heart away. Vayileit zignat shlomo nashav itu levavo achare lehim acharim. Even more so, they turned him towards Avodah Zarah. Lo ya levavo shalemim Hashem Elohav, kilvav David Aviv. And he lost it. He wasn't like David, whose heart was always with Hashem. So, Vayelech Shlomo acharei Astoret Elohei Tzidonim v'acharei Milkom Shikutz Amonim. He even walks after the gods. He I don't know if he quite worships them, but he Vayash Shlomo harad b'nei Hashem. He did evil in Hashem's eyes. V'lo milei acharei Hashem k'David Aviv. He didn't fill his heart after Hashem like his father. Az yivne Shlomo b'malichmosh Shikutz Moav. And then Shlomo built a bama. What's a bama? An altar to Shikutz. Shikutz, what does Shikutz mean? Like a shkatz, like it's like something disgusting. To the god, if you will, the deity of Ammon, okay, the idol of Ammon, which is something that we should find disgusting, but he built the bama to them. And he also made all these different sacrifices or altars to the gods of his wives. I mean, this is a very one way of achieving shalom bayit. You know, not recommended, but maybe this is what you know. What is it that Shlomo is again? What is it that's? I mean, how could he do this? He's lost it. There are no Nevi'im right now. Interesting. Now there will be soon, but not right now. If I'm not mistaken, there will be Navi coming up with the split of the kingdom, I think. Yeah, I mean, he really has. Listen, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. He's really, it seems like he's really lost it. We're going to have to try to understand this, and we will see different perspectives in Chazal next week. Let's read a little bit more. Vayitanaf Hashem b'Shlomo. Hashem is furious at Shlomo. Ki natal v'avol imen Hashem elokei yisoh, hanira elav pamayim. He turned his head away from Hashem, the one who revealed himself to him twice. Hashem specifically told him, don't go after these other gods. He didn't guard what Hashem said. Hashem said to Shlomo, because you haven't followed my ways, you haven't followed my covenant, I'm going to give the kingdom to your servant. I'm going to tear it away from you. I won't do it in your days because of David. I'm your son, I will tear it. I'll still give one shevet to your son. Because of David and because of Yerushalayim HaKodesh. Okay, this is what this will conclude today. It's going to get very interesting and it's going to get messy from here on in. We're going to discuss Shlomo's sins next week. We're going to see a whole range of different perspectives. Okay, well, have a good day, everybody.